This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Governor Scott Walker is unveiling Wisconsin's newest biennial budget next week. But this week, he's been giving residents a sneak preview, unveiling different aspects of the bill. One piece is funding the UW system, which has drawn praise and criticism over proposals to cut $300 million and to make the system a public authority. Here today to talk about what the proposals could mean for UW-La Crosse are UWL Chancellor Joe Gao, UWL political scientist Joe Heim, and UWL Associate Professor of Biology and Faculty Senate Chair Brad Seebach. Thank you all for being here today in what's been quite a busy week for probably all of you. First, I should probably mention that at this point in time, these are just proposals. The legislature still has to debate the budget. They still have to pass the budget. But, you know, Chancellor Gao, at this point in time, when we hear that $300 million could be cut from the system, $12 million potentially for UWL, what exactly does this mean?
Well, yeah, you're correct. It is a proposal. Now, those of us who have watched these things in the past, and certainly Joe Heim has more experience in that than any of us, know that a big portion of what the governor proposes typically does make it into the budget. So, you know, you have to take this seriously, and this is the starting point. And so we are trying to educate people on what implications it would have for the UW system and our campus in particular.
And Joe Heim, I mean, this plays into Wisconsin's facing a $2 billion shortfall, and $300 million is just a portion of that.
Yeah, the two billion, you have to know roughly $1 billion of that are proposed increases by state agencies, and you have to assume that they aren't going to get all that they want. The cost to continue, in other words, to run the state government exactly like it was the last 2 years, is roughly $1 billion. So that's the part that would increase the $300 million actually comes out of that, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. In other words, those are the real amounts that the governor has to make up and the legislature has to make up.
So at this point in time, when you think about $12 million, what are you looking at? I mean, I know that there was probably some sort of sense that cuts could be on the way, but Chancellor Gao, I mean, what could be cut?
Well, 86% of the budget at UWL is in compensation. We're a very people-centered enterprise. And so obviously, if things are really bad, then we've got to look at positions. And, you know, I've made a commitment, and the leadership team has, we don't want to lay anybody off. That'd be a real last resort because everybody we have is essential. But there are some areas where there are vacancies, where there are open positions, and we're going to look real hard at those and say, are there ways that we can get by, particularly over the next 2 years, either without those or at a reconfigured way?
I mean, are these faculty and staff positions that are open that you would just
There are all kinds of positions. Yeah. And you know, I think the thing that people forget is we are a little city here. We're not a one-room schoolhouse. And, you know, so instruction is our primary activity, but we also house and feed and have to take care of 3,300 students on campus. So, you know, that means we have plumbers and electricians and painters and locksmiths and people that plow snow and make food and, all kinds of things. So, I mean, we really need to look at our whole enterprise and say, where are the places that we have the most flexibility? But I can tell you, because these budget reductions are not new to us, I mean, they've really been happening for the past 10 to 15 years, we're a pretty lean operation. There is not a lot of, so-called fat that's easy to take out.
But when I've talked with some staff on campus, there is some fear that their jobs will be cut. So how do you ensure that, UWL doesn't have to bring on any layoffs?
Well, the student experience is the top priority. We can't compromise that. And, the faculty piece is huge there. So I think that is very secure in this thing. You know, I hope that really the dialogue we're going to have is, does this need to happen? You know, and I realize that the governor and the legislators, they want to keep tuition frozen. That's something they made a commitment to do. That'll be 4 years. That's a long time. But do we really need to have a $300 million cut in this state support for UW system. I mean, that's historic. I mean, we've had some big reductions, and they've come from both parties, I mean, under Governor Doyle and Governor Walker. But I think we're moving into territory here that's new, and that I think it's really time to take a good look at that. You know, we're still at an early stage in this process. The governor does have time between now and Tuesday to rethink that number, and certainly the legislators in the Assembly and Senate will have an opportunity. So one would hope that we're not looking at any kind of layoffs or position reductions or anything that's going to compromise quality for students.
Joe Heim, I want to ask you, are the cuts needed?
Some cuts are absolutely necessary. I don't mean with the university necessarily, but when you have a real deficit of roughly $1 billion, the legislature has to address that. And frankly, throw in the fact that the governor talked about further tax cuts, particularly property taxes, it's going to be very difficult to deliver that without some kind of substantial cuts. So, and the fact that the university is somewhat self-funded, we become a target for cuts, frankly. Although, in any type of a fight like this, it's, you know, if our cuts are less than $300 billion, that means somebody else's are more.
And Brad Seebach, I'm curious, what are you hearing from faculty in regards to the budget issue?
Extreme concern. We do not know how the university might possibly handle the size of these particular cuts without affecting the jobs of individuals who are here, but at least as importantly, the hopes that we have for what this institution can become. So we are always thinking about the quality of instruction and the interaction with the students. And there isn't, I don't think there's an individual on campus here in a faculty or staff teaching position who isn't thinking primarily about that and what they wish to do in order to improve that experience. So how do you do that in a circumstance where we have continuing cuts in the budget? You know, if you take a look at average faculty and staff here, I think the great majority probably are people who have come on in the last 12 years and have known nothing but cuts every time we come back to the budget cycle. And that's an extremely depressing fact to place against hopes and dreams for improvement.
So as Chancellor Gowa had talked about, you know, first and foremost, we can look at not filling open positions. And I'm sure there are number of open faculty positions. How does keeping those and maybe faculty levels lower, how does that impact the education that students are getting in different programs?
So how do these cuts affect?
Well, just not filling these open positions.
Oh, well, there is a process of continual reinvention on the academic side of the university where we try to adapt to what's happening in society around us. And I think that can be said for every single field where we have programs on the campus. So what you do if you make it impossible to fill positions as vacancies occur or to expand in areas to address new interests, new advances in sciences or social sciences or humanities, any of those, is you make the university less relevant to the world of today. And you make us less able to adapt in the way our students most need.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about proposed cuts to the UW system. My guests are UWL Associate Professor of Biology and Faculty Senate Chair Brad Seebach, UWL Political Scientist Joe Heim, and UWL Chancellor Joe Gao. Joe Heim, I want to ask you about some comments that have been made by lawmakers just regarding the way that faculty are using or maybe not using their time, however you interpret it. Yesterday, Governor Walker said that faculty should maybe just teach more classes. We've heard Speaker Robin Voss say that maybe they should focus their research on research that benefits Wisconsin's economy. Is this anything that we've heard from lawmakers in the past?
It's a little different. I've not heard that type of a criticism, frankly, especially the research stuff in a long, long time, not least publicly. But these things have an effect on morale. And that is one of the concerns when Brad was talking about faculty in general. This reminded me a little bit of the Act 10. The governor, by the way, talked about this as being the Act 10 for the UW system. And that caught my attention, frankly. One of the results of Act 10, which people don't measure very well, is the morale of the teachers in the state of Wisconsin. Would you want to go into K-12 education after Act 10? Many people retired after that, and they lost huge numbers of high-quality people. I'd be concerned about morale on the campuses in the UW system, frankly. If you've got a perceived attack on research, an attack on not doing enough work, and you're sort of telling people to start teaching extra classes, and then you talk about budget cuts, it's not a very positive environment for maintaining professors to keeping here. If you had a job potential for in Illinois and you're going to stay in Wisconsin, or you're going to go to Illinois, under these circumstances, you might very well move to a safer environment. If you're trying to recruit somebody into Wisconsin, and already their salaries are roughly 20% below their peers across the country, and you say, well, we're going to teach five classes here instead of four, or some, you know what I mean, increased workload, and then you're going to be criticized for your research if it isn't relevant to Wisconsin. Is this where you'd want to come? Those are morale issues and recruitment issues. We are a national university that recruits nationally. And both directions, you know, input and output, shall we say. You wonder what this is going to do. If this becomes a morale issue with faculty, I don't see a positive outcome of this.
Brad, maybe just backing up for people who don't understand a typical day in the life of a faculty member, can you explain what it is that faculty members do?
Well, I think what most people assume is that we spend most of our time in the classroom. And I have to say, we do spend a lot of time in the classroom. But because of the level of education that we are at, we spend more time working with students outside of the classroom than we do inside of the classroom. Also, there is a very large amount of time that we spend in adapting the materials so that they are up to date year to year in the classes that we are teaching. So there is a much greater amount of time spent on ensuring the quality of the education, the personal interaction that students need for career advancement, figuring out what they want to do with their own lives in the positions that we are in.
And Chancellor Gao, I'm curious, just as, you know, the key figure, the head of the university, you know, you're going to be very involved in finding these cuts. But as Joe Heim mentioned, there's also a sense that we need to maintain morale. How do you find that balance and walk and try to make everyone happy?
Well, I think that those comments about what faculty do and maybe what people want them to do are very unfortunate. They're uninformed. You know, we're going to have to educate legislators in particular, some people out in the public, that as Brad has said, you know, it's a full day and night all week when you're a faculty member. And so I the thing that I'm worried most about on that is it's really, frankly, kind of a distraction. And I think that the core issue is this massive defunding of higher education. And, you know, I don't want the conversation to go somewhere else. I think the real issue is on the finances. And actually, we're seeing in some of the headlines today and stories that the governor is indicating he is open to rethinking this big cut. I have my phone here
right now.
I can see some of these stories. And, you know, here's one. Let's see.
So then there could be a potential that the cuts may not be as large as $300 million.
I don't know.
I guess we'll all find out on Tuesday
Governor
night.
Governor Walker opened to negotiating UW system funding cut. You know, so I hope we don't lose sight of that. I can assure you one of the things that my jaw kind of dropped in reading some of the comments was that, you know, under the public authority, chancellors would be authorized to force faculty to you know, take on this extra course. I would not do that. You know, I've come out of an academic tradition. I taught for 18 years. I know how hard it is. I know what the right teaching load is. And I think my colleagues feel the same way. So, you know, I don't think you can, you know, sort of undo hundreds of years of what we've established in academia with, you know, just by kind of making comments. I do think, though, on the funding side, legislators can vote to undo many years of solid funding, and I think that's what's been happening. And this latest proposal is, you know, sort of the ultimate in this. And so we've got to really stay focused on it and convince the governor to rethink the size of the cut.
Brad?
If I could just jump in on that, I think one of the things that you would do if you tried to increase the number of classroom hours that instructors had on campus is that you would lose the ability for most faculty to have a significant research program. And the research program in almost all circumstances, involves a significant number of our undergraduates who are being prepared to go on using that research into their own fields. It also is what keeps us as faculty on top of the most current understandings in the field. So I think that if you required people to, on average, increase by a lecture period or whatever it might be, a class, the amount of time they spend in the classroom, you're going to lose quality in the end product, and that certainly is not what we want, the end product being our students being preparedness for the world after college.
Joe Heim?
I thought that responded was pretty good.
So when we look at the $12 million cuts that could come to UW La Crosse, you know, you look at staffing first. Where else can you find the cuts beyond staffing, especially if you don't want to cut jobs, if you don't want to fill positions? Where else can the savings come from?
Well, we can do, you know, I mean, there are budgets for supplies, there are budgets for equipment. You know, you can cut those back. I mean, you can... there are always apparently vacancies in our custodial area, you know, so we wouldn't clean rooms as often. Now, I mean, you know, it's just sort of, you know, that old phrase, death by a thousand cuts. I mean, there are these little things that maybe it's not the end of the world, but it does compromise what we're providing, and we certainly don't want to have to do that. Another strategy would be to grow the enrollment. Now, we're kind of limited there. We're a small campus, smallest campus in the system, 110 acres.
And there's already a housing shortage.
Yeah, we have a housing shortage. We need another residence hall. We're bounded by a historic cemetery, an elementary school, a nice historic neighborhood. I don't think we're going to be able to grow out of our footprint too much. So, you know, there's only so many options we have.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about proposed cuts to the UW system. My guests are UWL Chancellor Joe Gao, UWL Political Scientist Joe Heim, and UWL Associate Professor of Biology and Faculty Senate Chair Brad Seebach. Let's jump into the idea that was put forward this week that the UW system could become a public authority. Joe Heim, as our resident historian, can you explain what exactly is a public authority in the state of Wisconsin, first and foremost?
It's an interesting category. There are eight of them in the state of Wisconsin. If you look at an organization chart of Wisconsin, and look, right now we are essentially an independent agency run by a part-time board under the control of the governor. So we are technically under the control of the governor. The word authority, if you look at a chart of the organization of the state of Wisconsin, they are not under the direct control of the governor. They're set aside as separate corporations, and that's the term that they use. So these are separate corporations that have specific purposes designed by, in this case, education. The Wisconsin Hospitals, for example, University Hospitals is one of them. WEDIC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, is another one. Those are the two most widely known. The part that caught my attention, however, as I was reading through this, is that there's independent. There's a lot of independence relative. So the advantage of the authority is that you have less control, less micromanagement by the legislature, more authority, more autonomy. But it also mentioned that they are primarily self-funded. Boy, that got my attention. Because if you have a university system that is self-funded, we all know what that means. Essentially, it means pretty much a privatized university system. Is that where we're headed? I hope not. I don't think so. But that's what an authority is, basically.
So what much would change if the UW system did become a little more privatized, I guess?
Well, I think tuition would certainly go up. If that's your primary source of funding, along with grants and things of that sort, without state support, and that's sort of, frankly, the direction we've been headed. We used to get roughly 15% of the state financing. We're now down below 10. I think we're closer to 7%. So we've been losing budget share for a long time.
I talked with Board of Regents President Michael Falbo this week, and I asked him about the funding issue. And, you know, he talked about how eventually they could raise tuition. They want to look towards philanthropy, if this does end up going through, look towards philanthropy. And from what I understand, there would be a fund set up that is similar to the transportation fund in the state, where sales taxes would help fund the university also. Now, when you look at the philanthropy side, probably for a school like UW-Madison, that could work out wonderfully. But you wonder with UW-La Crosse, maybe a school like UW-River Falls, and how different that could be. Chancellor Gao?
Well, you're right on the mark. Some campuses, most notably Madison, you know, actually the state share there is really small. The biggest share of their funding comes from federal contracts and grants. And then philanthropy, they have a foundation that raises over $330 million a year, even in recessionary times. So, I mean, they would have some options that a campus like ours wouldn't have. I want to stress, for us, the two big drivers of support are the state appropriation and tuition. And as Joe Heim has said, you know, we have seen the state support has gone down, tuition has gone up. I don't know that under this public authority we would be, you know, sort of purely privatized in the way that a true private school where there's no state support. There is that idea that you've talked about a fund that comes through sales taxes and is increased, I guess, by the cost
with
of living.
Yeah.
Inflationary increases. The challenge on it is what's the level of funding there? And I believe I may have this wrong, but under the governor's proposal, it would be this new minus $300 million for the system. And I believe that is the lowest level of support since 1998. So we would be—
In this upcoming biennial
yeah.
budget?
Okay. So hypothetically, we would be starting out under a public authority with, you know, a pretty small, modest amount of state support. And then as you've heard, you know, well, then tuition would have to be used to offset it. And I that's where I'm skeptical that legislators are really willing to go there, because they seem now like they really enjoy this kind of role of we're going to, you know, protect the students from the administration of the university that wants to raise tuition all the time. And I need to remind people, we would prefer not to raise tuition. We would prefer there was not tuition at all, you know, K-12, that we had a society and a state that had a commitment to providing everybody with a college education. Unfortunately, that is not the case. And so we do see this kind of back and forth on state support, tuition. But at some level, I hope people would acknowledge you can't provide an excellent education, you know, for free. I mean, we've got great faculty and staff. They work very hard. They're there for students. We already are paying them 18% below the average at peer institutions. And it's amazing our people hang in there and keep delivering for us. This year, we won our third Wisconsin Professor of the Year in just 4 years. That's extraordinary. So we have some very talented people here. So, you know, you have to get the funding in place to pay for that. And that means we have to have a realistic conversation about what it costs to provide a higher education and who pays for that and how much of that is the students pay directly and how much state support, wherever that is coming from, a sales tax or the way we do it now, is provided.
Joe Heim, so would, if this became a public authority, essentially UW system would get much less state funding than it does at this point in time?
It appears like that less money would continue.
Okay.
You know, I'm a skeptic about the source of revenues. Setting a state money aside as a trust fund, and it comes from a select amount of sales tax with automatic increases, this stuff could all be changed 2 years from now. These are statutory changes that the legislature could simply alter very quickly and very easily. So I don't see much. Frankly, if you compare to the transportation fund, that's been eaten up often over the years. So it's not a sacred amount of money. So it's no different, frankly. I'm a skeptic of that. The source of revenue, you could say whatever you want to say about it, but it's not that significantly different from what we're presently getting in terms of source of revenue and the ability for the legislature and the governor to change it.
One thing I've heard from faculty and staff over these last couple weeks as I've been talking with people about these issues is if the UW system became a public authority, what it would mean for shared governance. And Brad Seebach, I know this is something that you've been thinking quite a bit about, and especially as leading the Faculty Senate on campus. What are you thinking about with this? I understand that, you know, it could be eliminated from the state law, but the Board of Regents could create their own form of shared governance.
We're certainly hoping that the Board of Regents will put forward policy that would take the place of Chapter 36 in state statutes and give us a give us, as part of their policy, a role for shared governance, both for faculty and for students and for staff, all groups, that would continue much as it is. I think most people outside of the university setting probably don't have much an appreciation for what shared governance actually accomplishes, but either of my fellows here at the table could probably tell you what that role has been in their experience, but faculty governance in particular is providing oversight of curriculum matters, of matters related to promotion and salary for individuals on campus. We are taking a look at and trying to help people who are disadvantaged, whether it's students or faculty or staff, any of those. I think there is really an essential role here for governance from all of these different groups that should be maintained.
Joe Heim, did you want to add anything about this?
Sure. Comment on that, because I'm one of the reasons I'm in the UW system is because of shared governance. I've always thought it was a sacred thing that the university has. It's very unique. It works well. I've never heard chancellors criticize it, frankly. They generally support it and like it. Now, I will say this, although it could substantially be altered, and that's what the concern is. Students are very upset about this. Faculty are concerned about it. But the president,
because students are a part of shared governance as
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone has their roles in it to play. But President Ray Cross this morning, I heard him on radio talking about the fact that the tenure in shared governance will not be altered, that under this new structure, that the regents will protect it. Mike Falbo, the president of the region, said the same thing. And the vice president of the board said the same thing. So I think the commitment, the region commitment is still strong for tenure and shared governance. And that reassured me quite a bit, frankly. And they more or less said it was a big, major part of the way universities operate.
Chancellor Gao?
I agree. I have heard the same kinds of things, and I know that all the chancellors feel the same way. And, you know, to give a sort of example, maybe more specific of what Brad was talking about, you know, think about, if somebody says to me, why do I need to take that biology class? I don't know. I'm not the expert in biology. The faculty in biology, that's what they are trained and thoroughly educated and have committed their life to, is what's the best curriculum for biology? What's the best curriculum for general education? I mean, these are things that I think would be just unthinkable to take out of the hands of faculty who that's what we want them to be doing. The other thing I think that, given the conversations I've heard, one of the things that has motivated this interest in, shared governance, you know, the critics say, well, it takes too long. And one of the things I've heard is, you know, the chancellor searches, for example, they're so open and participatory with students, faculty, and staff that we can't get candidates, top-notch people, and we saw this with and here I am, so you got me. But the recent searches at Milwaukee and Madison, there were people that said, "Well, gee, there were no sitting presidents or chancellors in the finalist pool," and that's because people don't like this very open participatory process. They don't want to be known that they're out there. Okay, well, if you change that and said, well, somehow we're going to do this in secret and we're not going to involve the faculty, the students, the staff, you know, I can speak from experience. When I came to UWL 8 years ago, they vetted me very thoroughly and there were other candidates. And at the end of that, they said, he's the one that we want. And so I came into this position knowing that I had the full confidence of the people in the institution. I think if you did that in a way that it kind of came from secret, as somebody coming into the job, I would feel, gee, I don't know, is this going to work? You know, so I think we have to be very careful on these issues. And, tampering with shared governance or tenure, workload, I mean, these are things that are well established, not only in the UW system, but in universities around the country and the world. And I don't think we're doing it right now.
I want to play another comment from President Cross before we take a quick break and get your reactions to it, because I think it seems to be his just general thought process and how he's interpreting a lot of these conversations that are going on within the legislature and how the UW system works with them. So go ahead and take a
listen. One of the problems we have, and we will often use this phrase, is the legislature trying to micromanage the university. And I would argue that the legislature doesn't necessarily know how to do anything other than try to control us at this point. You should be doing this. Why is this happening? What's going on here? In some ways, all of those phrases reflect public perceptions, public issues, and they're merely echoing that. What I'm trying to do is say to the legislature, you have to stop trying to control us, and you have to try to hold us accountable. Those are two different things. Give us the outcomes you think are important. Let us work toward those outcomes.
Joe Heim, can I get your quick response on that before we take a quick break?
Well, that's sort of reassuring. Ray Cross is, I think he's a very fine manager of the UW system. And he works well with the legislature. He's probably the best at politics down at the Capitol of any president in my lifetime. Because that's, I have to think back a little on that. but basically, he understands legislators, and I think he talks about it. There is an element of micromanaging once in a while. There's no doubt about it. But in balance, for the most part, it's more have to do with accountability. The university is extraordinarily accountable. Every year, they put out an accountability report. Every campus puts out an accountability report. We are extraordinarily accountable given the amount of state tax dollars that we get. That's my impression of it anyway. And frankly, that openness is important in the state of Wisconsin. So I'm a fan of that.
And we'll talk more about some ideas that President Cross has after a quick break. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking with UW political scientist Joe Heim, UW La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao, and UW La Crosse Associate Professor of Biology and Faculty Senate Chair Brad Seebach about proposed changes to the UW system. To hear our audio archives of today's show, visit our website at WPR.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. The UW system has received millions of dollars in cuts during recent budget cycles. Along with that, some lawmakers have even criticized research that's been conducted on campuses and the way faculty spend their workdays. To try to address those issues, UW System President Ray Cross laid out a number of priorities at the December Board of Regents meeting, saying he wants to look at how business is conducted throughout the system, how academics could be reformed, and how fees and new building projects could be scrutinized more. Here today to talk about what the proposals could mean for UW-La Crosse are UWL Chancellor Joe Gao, UWL Associate Professor of Biology and Faculty Senate Chair Brad Seebach, and UWL Political Scientist Joe Heim. So maybe let's dive into these priorities right away. The first priority that Ray Cross put forward is reforming business practices. So he says he wants to do a thorough analysis of back office practices, which is looking at IT departments, HR. And Chancellor Gao, I'm assuming this plays into the work that schools will have to do in regards to looking at the state budget and potential cuts.
We do the same thing on campus, and I think it's wise. And, you know, you always have to be looking at, particularly with technology, are there ways that you can do things more efficiently and less expensively? And actually, we have an opportunity, I'm told, with our phone system and can do some things with new technologies that will save some money. So I'm not surprised that President Cross is talking about that, because it's something, you know, very important to take advantage of those opportunities.
Joe Heim, has there ever been a time when another UW system president has really laid out proposals like this, saying we need to really hunker down and take a look at everything we're doing?
Well, you have to go back a ways. I don't know if I want to name any names, but yes, different presidents have done things like this. But it hasn't always been very effective over time. And I think Ray Cross is more businesslike than previous presidents. And it's one of the criticisms I hear from regents over the years is that that our university presidents have tended to come from academia, and because we don't understand business apparently. So there's that criticism has been there, frankly. But generally, I think Ray Cross is moving, and this era has changed, you know, financially, et cetera. And I think he's trying to make the university more businesslike without the onerous sides of it, which could be there. So I applaud him for doing that, and he's far more organized. He's a very nice guy, but he's very organized about things. And he has changed the structure and culture of UW system administration. And he's brought in some good people, frankly, that are going to help with that as well. So I'm optimistic that that this proposal of turning us more business-like will have a positive outcome for the entire system.
He also wants to establish a hotline where people can report waste, fraud, and abuse, which I thought there already was a state hotline to do this. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on this.
Well, it's not a new idea within the country. You know, we have ombudsmen and we have hotlines of this sort at the federal level. So it's a borrowed idea, but it's a good idea. And it's consistent with business, frankly.
And Chancellor Gao, if, you know, someone on the UWL campus wanted to address this locally, not take it to the state, where would they go if they thought that they had ideas where the campus could save money?
I'm not going to say, but let's just say that I am contacted frequently by people who have issues about the university. And, you know, I guess what I don't. But I'm a little, you know, uneasy. Is this, what was it, fraud, waste, and abuse?
Fraud, waste, and abuse, yeah.
You know, I don't think there's a lot of that going on. I do think that there are people who maybe get a parking ticket and they're not happy, or there's, you know, the hours of the dining hall or something like that, and we hear about it. You know, I would think if there was some major fraud, waste, and abuse, we would be told. But if this is some new way to give people some assurance that they will have an avenue to express concerns, that's wonderful. I would think there would be some cost that would come with it.
They said it'd be about $70,000 annually.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that after a year that it's looked at and is it doing something that outweighs that $70,000 expenditure.
And also under this proposal, which Chancellor Gao, you addressed before the break, is reforming the search process for presidential, chancellor, and vice presidential positions within the campus. And I know there's a bit of difference of opinion. Brad Seebach, we've talked before how you wish that that process would remain open and that people on campus could see who the final three or four finalists are.
Absolutely. I want to say two things with regard to this. One is that I think if they're not seeing the breadth of candidates that they are hoping for in the search process over the last number of years, that probably has more to do with the general atmosphere. Who wants to step into a leadership role at a campus that's facing very poor relations with the state government, which is continually cutting their budget? That's a really hard situation to step into. So I would urge them to be looking at that as part of the reason rather than the openness of the process. And secondly, and this picks up on what Chancellor Gao was saying before the break, the openness in the process is something that builds relationships for that person as they're coming onto campus, and they then have an opportunity to work with people in a very positive way who are supportive of them before they even set foot on campus. And I think that's an essential thing for individuals coming into chancellor or provost positions.
Now, I will put in a little bit of nuance here, and I don't know whether Brad will want to counter what I'm going to say, but I have heard that there is some concern that chancellor positions that there's sort of a traditional requirement that person have the qualifications to be a tenured professor. Now, I don't know. I mean, I think maybe we're at a point in time when we need to think, is that really so necessary? You know, that really seems to be a reflection of the old days when we thought, well, it's a faculty person, and I certainly fit the mold, stepped out and became the leader of the campus. But, you know, we're finding that there are people from all walks of life who have skills and background that can lead. And I guess I would just hope that we can be open to that, not saying that, you know, but I think that was something that I heard in this dialogue as well.
Joheim?
The one thing that I've heard over the years has to do with people who will not apply because the names are released at the end. In other words, if you're at a university someplace, you're a chancellor or president, you don't want your present campus to know that you're doing this, to be blunt. And so I've heard from legislators and administrators that that's part of the reason we don't get the best and brightest necessarily always applying for these
positions.
But
why does that matter if the current campus knows? You know, maybe you've been sought out by the other campus.
Because some view it as negatively.
Well, I mean, to put it sort of maybe a bit coarsely, it would be like you were looking for another spouse. I mean, you know, that's not exactly. But, you know, the thing of it is it's really unique to Wisconsin, and I think maybe this is where there's room for a little bit of compromise. We have a law that says the names of the top five people, not the finalists, but the top five people have to be disclosed. And so what you saw in the search for the president of the system, Ray Cross, there were three finalists. Well, there were two other people who were offered that opportunity, and they said, no, I don't want to go any further. I don't wish this to be public. And then those names were disclosed because of the law. Mm-hmm. That seems a little bit overbroad. I would hope we would agree that there needs to be finalists. We need to know who they are. But, you know, as far as who applied for the job and who had conversations at a preliminary level, I don't know that that's that critical. You know, so that's where maybe there's room to rethink this without, you know, kind of totally privatizing it. Or
I want to talk next about the segregated fee and facility request reforms that President Cross is calling on to. Essentially, at this point in time, you know, every UW La Crosse student pays $1,200 annually in segregated fees. This is on top of tuition, and that pays for anything from the rec center. It finances the student union. It pays for a sustainability initiative, basically non-state funded programs that the students support, more or less. So what are your thoughts when you hear that maybe reform, we need to take a look at existing seg fees and really scrutinize future segregated fees? Brad?
I would say that's true, that we do need to take a look at how segregated fees are set up, what they're being used for, and the approval process that students use on different campuses. I mean, this is as much an expense as the tuition dollars that people are very worried about. Whether you want to restrict campuses from using segregated fees, that's a different matter. I don't think you want to put overall caps in on that. And I think the student governance groups would probably be in agreement. There are things that they would have as high priorities that could only be paid for sometimes through segregated fees.
Chancellor Gao?
Well, it's important to remember that on our campus, at least, I don't know how it works on other campuses, segregated fees have all been voted on by students. They've asked for them. They have things they want. We have a green fee where people said, let's do sustainability projects, and I believe it's $7 a semester, and that was voted on and instituted, and that money is collected and then used to do – the students have a committee, and they set up the projects. That academic initiatives fee that you talked about, that's been used to do more library hours, to provide people with some assistance on study abroad. You know, so those fees are there for a reason, and I need to underscore, we are not a for-profit entity. We're not like an airline where we say, hey, let's create a baggage fee and we can make $25 more per passenger and pass that on to our shareholders as profit. We are here to provide a great academic experience to the students. We're very sensitive to what they need and what they want, and we try to find a balance in how to pay for that, and that's why we have the structure we have. If people want to take a closer look at it, that's fantastic, because I think they'll discover that all those fees are there for a reason. If you want to rethink them, we can do that as well. But, you know, I would make no apologies for having them.
Last week, I talked with UWL Student Association President Kaylee Otterbacher, and she's actually working on a committee with UW System exploring these seg fees. And she, well, I'm going to play a clip from her. Basically, her thought that maybe control should stay within campuses and not come from the system. Here's Kaylee.
And I do really think that, you know, students on each campus do decide what's best for their campus. It's not my job at UW La Crosse to decide what's best for UW Green Bay. That's not, you know, that's not fair. Students elect their leaders. They're supposed to do that. That's the way it's always been done. And I think that's a very good way of doing so. And if students start to realize that, you know, hey, these seg fees are getting a little out of control for what we're getting out of it, then it's their job to go back and look at their elected officials and say, what's going on here? How can I get involved in the process? And how can I change change this.
Joe Heim, did you want to react to that?
I think that the comments of Brad and the chancellor are very accurate. Bill Kelly, the president of the Student Association. The only thing I'm going to add is that nationally, fees in general have gone up faster than tuition. And that's part of the reason it became a political concern, nationally at least. I think in Wisconsin, you get down and look at it, and you basically applaud how it's done and the fact that they're reasonable.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the national piece. Let's remember, and I'm, you know, guilty of maybe a little bit of institutional promotion here, but I am the chancellor and like to do that. But Kiplinger's magazine said, you know, schools that charge less than $30,000 a year in fees and tuition, and that would be us, let's rank them in terms of who provides the greatest value to the students in terms of outcomes. We're number four in the whole country. So I think what that says is we have a very reasonable fee and tuition structure, and we provide great value in return for that. So, you know, I think, again, you'll have to forgive me. We're doing this correctly. It doesn't need to be dramatically changed at UW-La Crosse.
One of the final priorities that President Cross wants to really take a deep look at this year is refocusing academic priorities. So he has suggested developing uniform work guidelines for how faculty are using their time outside of the classroom. He wants to manage and really look at courses that have low enrollments, programs as well, and also potentially drive down the credits required to graduate in certain programs. Brad, I know this is something that faculty are really paying close attention to.
Well, how could you pick three topics there that would be more to the heart of a faculty member? Program array, when he's talking about program array on different campuses, that really speaks to a core interest of campus faculty as well as students, and I think probably to the families of all of those students. Do you want to send your child to college in a place where they have an opportunity to explore the career options that are out in front of them fully, or do you want to send them to a specialized campus? If you want the former and have that person, that new student, be
able
to—
Look at biology, philosophy,
sure.
English.
I mean, the average student who comes to campus here will change their major more than twice during the time in their first 2 years on campus. I'm not talking about a simple change from something like chemistry into biochemistry, which is a gradual sort of transition, but I mean broadly between major fields. And so you want to maintain strengths in a broad array of programs in order to allow people to determine what they are best suited to, what they most enjoy as they go through this transition from childhood into being an adult and out on their own in the world. So the program array, when we talk about that at the UW system level, people get very nervous here because it starts to speak to are we going to close programs that have smaller enrollments than others? And while you have to look at some things like that in looking at efficiencies, you also have to recognize that a program that has classes that are enrolling 10 or 15 students rather than having 65 or 100 in a lecture section, that class with 10 or 15, that's a core part of the college student's experience. It's one of the places they'll actually have a quality experience, interaction with faculty, and develop the mentorships that will carry them on.
As we're running short on time, I'm wondering if we want to go down the line and just maybe share your final thoughts when you think about and just how we approach this year as a UW system. Joe Heim?
Well, I'm going to throw out an accolade to both Brad and the chancellor. One of the things that I think has distinguished UW-La Crosse from other campuses, both in the last few years but also this year, is their response to changes of this sort. I think morale in this campus is better than most campuses. And I think a big part of it is the chancellor's role in how he handles these types of changes and minimizes the impact on faculty. And I think Brad understands this as well. They both responded almost immediately to these news stories of the last several days. And I think it's very effective communication with faculty and allays some of the fears that people otherwise would have.
Chancellor Gao, any final thoughts on how we approach the year?
Well, Joe Heim is very kind, and I'm glad you feel that way. And you know, we'll keep trying. I have five words. The cut is too big. That's the message. I think everybody listening to this show should take that to the governor and the legislators. The cut is too big. Let's rethink it. $300 million is too much to take out of the UW system and expect us to keep providing the kind of excellence we provide. So let's hope we can get that across.
And Brad Seabach.
I would like the people of the state actually to understand the importance of the UW system remaining strong and high quality. The last thing that you want to do when you have an 18-year-old leave your household is to have them decide to go somewhere outside of Wisconsin and make those major life decisions based on what they're experiencing elsewhere, rather than to have them do it in-state through the institutions we have. And this cut is large enough that it will have detrimental effects.
UWL Associate Professor of Biology and Faculty Senate Chair Brad Seebach, UWL Chancellor Joe Gao, and UWL Political Scientist Joe Heim were my guests today. We were talking about changes to the UW system. I should note that Wisconsin Public Radio is a part of the UW system. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Mian Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share a comment or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.